Imagine it is like 4:00 p.m. on a Friday. Your creative agency in Santa Monica is maybe an hour away from submitting a pitch for this massive company-altering contract.
Oh, the pressure is totally on.
Right. Everyone is frantic, tweaking final designs, running the numbers, and then suddenly every single computer screen in the office just goes black.
Just absolute panic.
Yeah. A second later, they all wake back up, but your desktop is replaced by this blinking red padlock and, a message demanding payment in Bitcoin.
Which is pretty much every business owner's worst nightmare.
Exactly. And you don't have an internal IT department. You just have, like, a phone number for a guy who fixed your printer last year. So what do you actually do?
I mean, honestly, it's a completely paralyzing moment.
Yeah.
And in that specific second, you realize that your digital infrastructure isn't just, you know, a support system for your business. It literally is the business.
Yeah, if the data is locked, the company effectively ceases to exist until it's unlocked.
Exactly. You're dead in the water.
Welcome to another deep dive. Whether you are running a business yourself, managing a remote team, or, you just happen to be the person everyone in the office inevitably corners for tech help.
We all know that person.
Right. Understanding this massive shift from fixing what's broken to preventing the fire in the first place, well, it's going to completely change how you view everyday technology.
It really is a total paradigm shift.
Today, we're looking at the hidden digital backbone of modern operations. We've got this fascinating stack of source material from Technegian, an IT support provider with, gosh, over 25 years of experience in Southern California.
Yeah, really long track record there.
So our mission today is to explore these fast-paced business hubs, places like Santa Monica and Playa Vista, and uncover why the traditional reactive ways of managing workplace technology are just structurally failing.
Well, the landscape they operate in is this perfect microcosm for the whole industry shift. When you analyze how these different professional ecosystems handle their infrastructure, you see a much broader narrative about risk, scale, and, operational maturity.
Okay, let's unpack this because the stakes here are so much higher than just getting the Wi-Fi to reach the conference room.
Oh, absolutely.
Looking at Technegian's footprint in Santa Monica, you have these incredibly distinct cultures crammed into just a few square miles.
It's super dense.
Right. There are highly traditional professional service firms and law offices near the Third Street Promenade. Then, just down the road in Playa Vista, you have ad tech companies and explosive startups.
Total opposites in how they function.
Yeah, and along Wilshire, it's established marketing agencies interspersed with independent creative studios. I mean, a law firm and an ad tech startup couldn't look more different on the surface.
Totally. They have completely different compliance requirements, different data footprints, and like totally different expectations for operational speed.
Right.
A law firm is optimizing for extreme confidentiality and document retention. But a creative studio, they're pushing massive multi-gigabyte video files to the cloud constantly. They just need raw bandwidth.
Yet, despite those diverging needs, the data highlights that they all run into the exact same wall when they rely on legacy IT models.
They absolutely do.
Let's look at the two primary models businesses default to. The first is the solo IT guy. And I want to look at the psychology of this because if I own a 30-person agency, hiring one sharp person to handle our tech, well, it feels really efficient,
Oh,
right?
sure. It makes total sense on paper.
Yeah, they are in the building, I know them, and I'm not paying some massive corporate retainer.
Right. It feels efficient right up until you analyze the actual system design. What's fascinating here is that relying on one individual introduces a catastrophic single point of failure into your operational framework.
Oh, wow.
I mean, a solo technician might be brilliant, but they are still bound by human limitations. They require sleep, they take vacations, and they get sick.
So if that massive server failure happens while my solo IT person is like on a flight to Hawaii, my entire 30-person agency is just paralyzed.
Completely paralyzed. Or even more commonly, they just get bottlenecked.
How do you mean?
Well, say the solo technician is under a desk untangling a network switch.
Yeah.
And at that exact moment, the CEO's laptop crashes during a crucial board meeting. Who handles the triage?
Oh, I see. There's nobody else to call.
Exactly. The convenience of an in-house person kind of masks the fact that your business has zero horizontal scale when two things break at the exact same time.
Which brings us to the second legacy approach, right? The break-fix model, where you just pay an hourly rate to an external vendor whenever something breaks.
Yeah, break fix is the definition of reactive management. Nobody is monitoring your network traffic, patching your firewalls, or, you know, checking if your daily backups actually completed.
Right.
The vendor only engages when you call to report an active failure.
It's kind of like a triage nurse at an emergency room. You walk in bleeding, they patch the wound, and they send you home.
That's a great way to look at it.
But they aren't looking at your overall health. They don't know you have high blood pressure or that you're allergic to penicillin. They just stop the immediate bleeding and charge you for the bandages.
That is a perfect way to visualize it. And in technology, those underlying health conditions like unpatched software or failing hard drives, they don't suddenly manifest at convenient times.
Never.
The triage model guarantees downtime because the failure literally has to occur before the solution is even initiated. You are already losing money by the time you pick up the phone.
Because the break-fix model actively incentivizes waiting. Like, if I know it costs me $150 every single time I call the IT vendor, I'm going to tell my employees to just deal with the slow computer.
Exactly. You avoid calling.
I'm going to ignore the weird error message on the server because I don't want to incur a bill. And that friction allows tiny, easily solvable vulnerabilities to compound into catastrophic failures.
Which is exactly why the industry is rapidly abandoning break-fix in favor of managed IT. The economic and operational structure of managed IT fundamentally flips that incentive.
Right.
Instead of an unpredictable hourly invoice tied to disaster, a managed service provider, or MSP, operates on a predictable, flat monthly fee.
So the MSP is financially incentivized to make sure nothing breaks, rather than profiting off your downtime.
Precisely. To make that flat fee model work, they actually have to deploy comprehensive, proactive management.
So what does that look like?
We are talking about deploying dedicated teams to oversee your entire environment. Desktop hardware, server maintenance, operating system patching. They manage your network topology to ensure traffic routes efficiently.
Wow, so everything.
Yeah, they even manage VoIP phone systems, which requires an entirely different level of network stability.
Let's pause on VoIP for a second, because the material from Technasian heavily emphasizes this. Voice over internet protocol. We all kind of take internet phones for granted now, especially with remote work.
We really do.
But turning human speech into data packets is actually incredibly delicate, right?
It is incredibly sensitive to latency. If an email takes an extra 2 seconds to send, literally nobody notices.
Right.
But if a voice packet is delayed by just 200 milliseconds, you get that awful echoing talked over each other experience on a conference call.
Oh, I hate that.
Right. So managing a VoIP system for a hybrid workforce in Santa Monica means the MSP has to implement quality of service protocols, prioritizing voice traffic over, say, someone downloading a massive software update.
And doing that requires the other massive shift mentioned in the text, which is 24/7 monitoring.
Exactly. Monitoring is the mechanism that replaces that emergency room triage. Tools are deployed across the network that constantly look for anomalies.
Like what kind of anomalies?
Well, a hard drive doesn't usually just stop spinning out of nowhere. It starts vibrating slightly more, or the read-write speeds drop by maybe 20% over a week.
Oh, so there are warning signs.
Always. The monitoring catches that degradation, and the MSP replaces the drive on a Tuesday night before it fails on Thursday morning. The end user experiences zero friction.
That makes total sense for hardware, but I want to push back a little on the human element of this, like the actual daily support.
Okay, sure.
Because whenever I hear help desk, I have a very visceral negative reaction.
You and everyone else.
In a typical corporate environment, calling the help desk means dialing an 800 number, sitting in a randomized ticket queue, and eventually speaking to someone in a massive call center who has literally never heard of your company.
Yep. It's awful.
You have to explain from scratch how your software is set up, what your job title is, and why this specific error matters.
It is exhausting, and it drains productivity on both sides. The traditional tiered help desk is designed for the vendor's efficiency, not the client's. It basically treats every caller as a generic variable.
So how does an MSP operating at scale actually avoid that trap? Because the text notes Technasian focuses on businesses with 20 to 200 employees, which is a massive amount of daily tech requests.
They address this structural flaw with what they call the pod model.
The pod model?
Yeah. Instead of throwing your support ticket into a massive randomized pool of hundreds of technicians, your business is assigned to a dedicated pod.
Meaning I'm working with the same small group of humans every time?
Yes. Think of it as a primary care clinic rather than that emergency room triage we discussed earlier.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I like that.
The technicians in your assigned pod have documented your entire network topology. They know your specific software stack. They know that your lead video editor uses a custom rendering program that always conflicts with the new Windows update, for example.
Wait, so when I call in, I don't have to spend 15 minutes establishing the baseline context of my problem. I just say, hey, the rendering program is freezing again, and they already know exactly what I'm talking about.
Exactly. And that shared context is literally the only way a provider can hit the aggressive metrics we see in the source material, like an 8-minute response target.
8 minutes is crazy fast.
You cannot resolve an issue in 8 minutes if you spend 10 minutes just trying to map the client's network in your head. The pod model transforms a transactional vendor into an integrated extension of your own operations.
That distinction is huge, especially for those companies that might already have an internal IT person. The text mentions a co-managed approach.
Right, co-managed IT.
So instead of firing your internal IT director, the pod essentially acts as their heavy artillery. The internal person handles the daily strategy, and the pod handles the 24/7 monitoring, the patching, and the massive ticket volume.
Exactly. It allows your internal talent to focus on business growth and technology strategy rather than spending all their days resetting passwords and updating firmware.
Okay, so having a dedicated team that knows your network and fixes daily bugs in 8 minutes is incredible.
Yeah.
But, you know, fixing a printer jam fast creates a bit of a false sense of security, because while your IT team is busy efficiently routing your VoIP calls, a threat actor could be quietly sitting in your email server watching your financial transactions.
That is the real nightmare.
And that requires an entirely different type of defense. Here's where it gets really interesting, because the true value of managed IT isn't just about uptime. It is about survival against cyber threats.
The paradigm has completely shifted. Like,
yeah.
10 years ago, small businesses assumed they were flying under the radar. The prevailing logic was that hackers only targeted multinational banks or massive healthcare networks.
The sources make a stark counterargument to that, though. These mid-sized businesses in Playa Vista and Orange County are actually primary targets right now.
Because the threat actors have industrialized their attacks. They use automated scanners that just constantly probe the entire internet for open vulnerabilities.
So it's not even personal.
Not at all. They don't care about the name on the building. They care about the unpatched server port. Small businesses are lucrative targets because they often possess enterprise-level bank accounts and client data, but they rely on consumer-level security.
Which ties directly into a concept from the text that I think is the most urgent takeaway for a business owner today: cyber insurance readiness.
Oh, this is huge.
The insurance industry has finally caught on to how vulnerable these businesses are.
They really have.
Yeah.
The days of an insurance broker simply asking, "Do you have antivirus?" and then handing over a $5 million cyber liability policy are completely over.
It makes me think of trying to buy home insurance. You can't just call the agent and say, "Yeah, I think the previous owner installed a smoke detector, but I've never tested it or replaced the batteries. Just write me the policy."
Right, they'd laugh at you.
If you do that and the house burns down, the insurance company investigates, sees the dead batteries, and denies the claim. And businesses are currently doing the exact same thing with their network security.
That is a critical point. And the questionnaires for cyber insurance renewals have become brutally technical.
What kind of stuff are they asking?
They demand proof of multi-factor authentication across all endpoints. They require specific patching cadences. They want to know the exact architectural isolation of your backups.
And if you are relying on that break-fix guy we talked about earlier, you are entirely guessing on those questionnaires.
Which basically constitutes insurance fraud if you suffer a breach and the forensic audit reveals you lied about your security posture.
Oh, wow.
This is why a proper managed IT provider doesn't treat security as a bolt-on feature. Technegion embeds enterprise-grade security at the foundational level.
Let's define enterprise-grade, because that honestly sounds a bit like marketing jargon. What does it functionally mean for, say, a 50-person architectural firm to have enterprise security?
Let's break down the mechanics of it. The text specifically highlights tools like CrowdStrike for endpoint protection.
Okay.
Traditional antivirus software operates like a bouncer at a club checking an ID against a list of known bad guys. If the virus has never been seen before, a zero-day threat, it just walks right past the bouncer.
But CrowdStrike operates differently.
Yes. It uses behavioral heuristics. It doesn't just look for known bad files. It monitors what the programs are actually attempting to do.
Give me an example.
So if Microsoft Word suddenly attempts to execute a script that starts encrypting 10,000 files in the background at 2.0M, the endpoint protection recognizes that as malicious behavior.
Because Word shouldn't be doing that.
Exactly. It instantly kills the process and isolates the infected machine from the rest of the network, preventing the ransomware from spreading.
That is fascinating. It's looking at intent, not just a signature. And this ties into the concept of a SOC, or Security Operations Center, which was also heavily featured in the material.
Right. A SOC is the human element combined with the automated tools. It is a dedicated facility operating 247, staffed by security analysts who do nothing but investigate the alerts generated by tools like CrowdStrike.
Oh, I see.
So when that laptop gets isolated at 2:00 a.m., the SOC investigates the root cause, neutralizes the threat, and documents the incident.
And that documentation is what you hand to the cyber insurance underwriter. You aren't just estimating your security posture, you are proving it with immutable logs.
Exactly. You are providing evidence of compliance. The text also brings in vital context from the federal government, specifically the CISO Secure Our World initiative.
Right.
The Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency is actively trying to establish baseline hygiene for businesses because the cascading economic damage of these ransomware attacks is literally becoming a national security issue.
So robust cybersecurity stops the hacker. It isolates the threat. But let's look at the physical reality of Santa Monica. What happens when the disaster isn't digital?
Right, physical disasters.
What if there is a massive fire in a Wilshire office building, or a catastrophic hardware failure on the main server, or an earthquake? Cybersecurity tools can't stop the ceiling from caving in on your server rack.
Absolutely. And this brings us to the ultimate safety net: cloud infrastructure and true disaster recovery. The absolute golden rule of modern infrastructure is decentralization.
Meaning?
Your critical business data cannot live exclusively on a physical piece of metal in a closet down the hall.
Because if the sprinkler system goes off in that closet, the company's entire history, client roster, and financial data are just washed away.
Exactly. The material outlines how Technegen addresses this by migrating and managing environments across varied cloud platforms.
Like which ones?
Managing Microsoft 365, utilizing Azure and AWS for heavy compute loads, and they even maintain their own private data center for clients who require highly customized, compliant hosting environments.
So by moving the infrastructure to the cloud, a hybrid team spread across Southern California isn't relying on a VTN tunneling back to a single vulnerable office. The office just becomes a place to sit. The actual business lives in the cloud.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, moving to the cloud is only step one. Step two is disaster recovery. And disaster recovery cannot be merely a sentiment, as the material emphasizes hope for the best is not a business strategy.
This is where I want to dig into the actual mechanics of a disaster recovery plan. Because backing up data seems simple enough. We all have cloud drives. But disaster recovery is fundamentally different from just copying files, isn't it?
Vastly different. A backup is just a copy of your data. Disaster recovery is the documented, tested process of how quickly you can make that data usable again.
Usability is the key.
Right. If your main server dies, having a backup of your data is useless. If it takes you 3 weeks to procure a new physical server, install the operating system, configure the permissions, and then finally download the backup.
So true disaster recovery involves spinning up virtual environments.
Yes. A proper MSP utilizes image-based backups. They take a snapshot of the entire server, the data, the operating system, the exact configuration state.
Of the whole thing.
In a disaster scenario, they can spin up that image as a virtual machine in their data center or in Azure within hours.
Mm-hmm.
The business continues operating while the physical hardware is being replaced.
That translation from a technical mechanism to a business reality, well, that's the core of a proper IT assessment. I think a lot of leaders look at an IT audit and just see a list of routers and hard drives.
Yeah, but a good assessment translates those technical gaps into actual business risk.
Mm-hmm.
Think about network packet loss. A technical gap is the wireless access points in the conference room are dropping 15% of packets.
Which means nothing to a CEO.
Exactly. But the business risk is your network instability ruins the Zoom pitch with your biggest client, causing you to lose a $500,000 contract because you look unprofessional.
Ouch.
Or take backup verification. The technical gap is the database backup hasn't been verified by a test boot. The business risk is when ransomware hits, you discover the backups have been corrupted for 6 months and you literally have to close your doors permanently.
It changes the entire conversation. You stop talking about tech specs and start talking about whether the business can survive a Tuesday.
Precisely.
So as someone listening to this, the transition from reactive break fix to a proactive pod model with enterprise security is just an absolute no-brainer. But I want to talk about implementation and avoiding the pitfalls. How does a business actually start this process, and how do they navigate the pricing?
The onboarding process is the most critical phase, and it must begin with total discovery, never assumptions. Before an MSP takes over, they conduct that comprehensive IT assessment we just discussed. They have to map the entire digital ecosystem.
Because you can't protect what you don't know exists.
You have to document every single user, every mobile device touching the network, and every piece of legacy software still running on an old Windows 7 machine in the corner.
The scary stuff.
You have to hunt down the shadow IT, you know, the unauthorized cloud storage accounts employees set up because the official network was too slow.
Or the single undocumented password that only one guy in accounting knows, and he's retiring in 3 weeks.
Finding where a business relies on a single undocumented person or process is the very first step in risk mitigation. Only after that environment is fully mapped can the provider establish a secure baseline and introduce the dedicated pod.
Let's talk about the money, because pricing models in this industry can be incredibly misleading.
Very much so.
If I am a business owner looking at proposals, I might see a provider offering an a la carte menu. There is a small base fee, but they charge separately for help desk tickets. They charge an hourly rate for on-site support. They have a separate line item for backups. And cybersecurity is an optional add-on. Psychologically, I look at that and think, I'll just buy the bare minimum to save money.
It is the most common trap in the industry. But separating those charges completely obscures the true total cost of ownership for your technology. We circle back to the break-fix mentality.
Right, avoiding the invoices.
When every support call generates an invoice, your staff stops calling for help. The vulnerabilities multiply in the dark.
And suddenly, the quote-unquote cheap base plan is costing you tens of thousands of dollars in lost productivity, invisible downtime, and unmitigated security risks.
A comprehensive flat monthly model aligns the financial incentives. The monitoring, the patching, the unlimited pod support, the backup verification, and the cybersecurity, it is all handled proactively. The business experience is predictable operational expenses with virtually no surprises.
And the material highlights one final crucial element, marrying that scalable tech stack with an actual local presence. Technegian serves Culver City, Playa Vista, Orange County, and the greater LA area. They aren't just a remote call center.
That physical proximity matters. While 95% of issues can be resolved remotely in minutes, hardware still physically fails. Firewalls burn out. Offices relocate.
You need real people sometimes.
You need a partner capable of deploying boots on the ground for tangible troubleshooting while still maintaining the vast, around-the-clock operational depth required to monitor global cyber threats.
We have covered a massive amount of ground today. We started by dissecting the chaotic, highly stressful break-fix model and analyzing the systemic flaws of relying on a solo IT technician.
A lot of vulnerabilities there.
Right. We explored how moving to a proactive pod model fundamentally changes the operational dynamic, shifting from treating symptoms in an emergency room to preventative primary care for your network. We dug into the mechanics of behavioral cybersecurity tools like CrowdStrike, the necessity of a 247 SOC, and how the insurance industry is forcing businesses to actually prove their resilience. So what does this all mean for you?
It's the big question.
If you are leading a team, managing a budget, or simply trying to execute your daily work without a catastrophic system failure, the lesson is clear. Your technology infrastructure should be invisible because it is meticulously engineered and proactively monitored, not because it is being ignored until it shatters.
It requires an organizational shift in perspective. You had to stop viewing technology as a reactive expense column and start treating it as the foundational asset that secures your entire operation.
Absolutely.
This raises an important question for everyone listening. Think about the most vital piece of technology in your own life or your workplace right now. The one database, system, or application you absolutely rely on to function.
Everyone has at least one.
If it were utterly compromised by a threat actor or physically destroyed in a fire today, do you possess a documented, fully tested process to recover that data and resume operations by tomorrow? Or is your disaster recovery plan simply hope for the best?
It's the digital equivalent of trusting a smoke detector you've never actually tested. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Take a hard look at your own digital foundations, and we will catch you on the next one.